ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Hare Krishna. So, we are discussing from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 60. And today's shlokas are shloka number 58 and 59, which are the concluding shlokas of this chapter.
Shri Shuka Uvacha Evam Saurat Samlapair भगवान् जगदीश्वरः स्वरतो रमया रेमे नरलोकं विडम्बयन्। श्रीशुक उवाच एवं सौरत संलापैर् भगवान् जगदीश्वरः स्वरतो रमया रेमे नरलोकं विडम्बयन्। श्रीशुक उवाच एवं सौरत संलापैर् भगवान् जगदीश्वरः स्वरतो रमया रेमे नरलोकं विडम्बयन्।
नरलोकं विडम्बयन् श्रीशुक उवाच जगदीश्वरः स्वरतो रमया रेमे नरलोकं विडम्बयन्। Matajis. Word to word translation.
श्रीशुक उवाच
शुकदेव गोस्वामी सेड
एवं
इन दिस वे
सौरत
कॉन्जुगल
समलापै
बाय कन्वर्जेशंस
भगवान
द सुप्रीम लॉर्ड
जगत
ऑफ द यूनिवर्स
ईश्वरः
The master,
swa,
in himself,
rataha,
taking pleasure,
ramaya,
with Rama,
the
goddess of fortune,
that
is, with Queen Rukmini,
reme,
he enjoyed,
naralokam,
the world of humans,
vidambayan,
imitating. Translation purport and transition to the next shloka by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation to shloka 58. Shukdev Goswami said, "And so the self-satisfied Supreme Lord of the universe enjoyed with the Goddess of Fortune, engaging her in lovers' talks and thus imitating the ways of human society." Purport. The word Vidambayan means imitating and also ridiculing. The Lord acted like a husband of this world, but His pastimes are transcendental and expose the perverted nature of mundane activities aimed at bodily sense gratification. Text number 59, translation. The Almighty Lord Hari, preceptor of all the worlds, similarly behaved like a conventional householder in the palaces of His other queens, performing the religious duties of a family man. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupaha Kada Mayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nitinamine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. Before beginning this class, we would like to seek and beg for the blessings of all the assembled devotees. In this chapter, we have seen, because we have reached almost the end now, how Lord Krishna wanted to experience emotions with Rukmini Devi at a different level than His usual way of exchanging emotions. So He started teasing her by using very harsh words. And Rukmini Devi somehow took those teasing words as a reality. So she fainted. And then Krishna immediately understood, maybe he took it too far. So then he immediately apologized. He took a step back. He did not try to justify and say, no, I am right. And then he glorified Rukmini Devi. What a wonderful devotee you are. And now we see towards the end that this is the understanding given by the acharyas, that he was trying to imitate the ways of human life. Also in Dwarka Leela, you know, the whole daily schedule of Lord Krishna is mentioned in later chapters. So there also we see how Lord Krishna behaved like a human being. And so here we see how he is having relationships with his wife, and he tries to reinvent newer and newer ways to enhance that relationship. Since tomorrow is Narasimha Chaturdashi, we thought we should give some reference to tomorrow's festival also. So interestingly, in Narasimha Leela, when Lord Narasimha Dev appears, then everyone is so scared of him. So all the demigods then look towards Lakshmi Devi. Say, you approach him. So there Lakshmi Devi says, I can't approach him. He's too angry. I have never seen him so much anger. So the same Lakshmi Devi who refuses to go towards her lord out of fear, here the situation is somewhat reverse. Here the same Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, Rukmini Devi, is being consoled by that angry Narasimha. So Krishna is saying, no, please don't become angry. I need you. I'm dependent on you. So it's very interesting. Rukmini Devi in her letter to Lord Krishna had mentioned, because she was the first duly wedded wife of Krishna. So she mentions in that letter, till now you have been a bachelor. So probably, you know, you think that after marriage, maybe my wife will control me. So maybe that's why you may not accept this letter, proposal of marriage. So she says, no, I know that previously you had come at Narasimha. She mentions that in that letter. So she says, in Narasimha form, I still remember how you were very fearful and I was very docile. So please don't fear that I will boss over you in our relationship. Please accept my proposal. Please get married to me. So here, this is very interesting how the same personality in Krishna Leela forgets all the anger, forgets all that greatness, that majesty, and falls at the feet of his wife. He says, no, I am dependent on you. And the reason is because he is displaying Naralila. So this is one quality of the Supreme Lord, that whatever form he takes, he goes deep into that mood. As Matsya, he appeared in the form of a very small fish and he jumped into the hands of King Satyavrat. So when Satyavrat saw that fish, he again put it into water. So the fish said, just look at me, I am a tiny small fish. If you put me back into the ocean, the water, then the bigger aquatics, first time it was a lake. So he says, the bigger aquatics might eat me up. So I need your shelter. Please don't abandon me. The tiny fish is saying. Who is the tiny fish? The Supreme Lord. And later that same fish becomes such a huge monstrous fish that it tugs along a huge giant ship full of all the species of life. All the birds, all the animals, all the plants, the rishis, and all the knowledge including the Vedas. So the Supreme Lord, you know, plays like that. In the Kurma incarnation, there was a need during the Samudra Manthan Leela for the mountain, Mandara mountain was sinking into the sea. So there needed to be something or some arrangement by which it would float on water. So now what floats in water? So some fish also can float, but the body of the fish is very gentle or very soft. So in Matsya incarnation, he could probably not do it. So then he takes a Kurma incarnation, he takes a tortoise incarnation. So the tortoise, the Supreme Lord comes and floats on the water, as tortoises do. But one advantage is that the back is hard. So on that hard back, then the Mandara mountain is kept and then the churning can take place. So perfectly imitating the ways of a tortoise. And it is mentioned how the Supreme Lord also, you know, he had some itch or something on his back. So when that Mandara mountain churning happened, then his itch also got relieved. As Narasimha, because tomorrow is Narasimha Chaturdashi, it is mentioned how that fierce face of a lion-like face of Lord Narasimha, when he killed Hiranyakashipu, then blood spattered. And then with his tongue, he licked that blood. That's what lions do. Yes. But another interesting thing is that when Prahlad comes and prostrates himself in front of Lord Narasimha, then Lord Narasimha picks him up, and it is mentioned he licks Prahlad's body with his tongue. That's how lions take care of their children. So it is mentioned in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita when Narad Muni is talking to Prahlad, he mentions this. He says, Lili he tasya gatrani swapotasya iva keshari. In all the human incarnations, Vaman, he is a Brahman. So Brahmanas live by begging. So that's what Vaman does. He goes and begs. As Ram, he is the king. So what do kings do? They have to maintain a very high standard. So that's what he does. So this is very interesting how Lord, the Supreme Lord actually gets into that mood. What can the Supreme Lord not do? It is said that all the contradictions are resolved in the Supreme Lord. So can God remove fear? Yes. When Mother Devahuti, when her husband Kardam Rishi is leaving Devahuti, and she says, you gave me everything as a husband, but you did not give me one thing. So she laments that you did not give me freedom from fear. You did not give me fearlessness. So he gives her that son, Kapil Rishi. So Kapil Rishi removes the fear of Devahuti. Can God instill fear? Yes. As Narasimha, he instilled fear. Or as the universal form, he instilled fear in Arjun. Can God be short, tiny? Yes. As Vaman, he is short. As the Paramatma, he is the tiniest. But can God be giant? Yes. As Narasimha, he was a huge giant. It is mentioned that when Hiranyakashipu attacked him, it looked as if a tiny moth is entering a giant flame. There is a painting in our BBT books. And Narasimha is huge actually. And it almost looked like a tiny insect. But still, he had that courage. And after Hiranyakashipu was killed, many of his followers attacked Lord Narasimha. And Lord Narasimha slayed them. So it is mentioned how after that fight, some of the followers of Narasimha were seen stuck up in the nails of Lord Narasimha. Mm-hmm. So that was like the giant form of Lord Narasimha. Does God cooperate? Yes. In Samudra Manthan Leela, he took so many forms just to cooperate with the demigods, that journey that was taking place. There was no resistance. Whatever was required, he took the form of a tortoise, he took the form of Ajita. Whatever form was necessary. He came as Vishnu to encourage them, because at one point of time they felt very discouraged. So many forms he took. Mohini Avatar. So almost four incarnations the Supreme Lord takes is one small gap of time. Does God force? So he cooperates. He does not force. But does he force? Yes, he forces also. How does he force? Dhruv Maharaj started doing his tapasya with one intention. And then when he sees the Supreme Lord, he gives up that intention. He says, now I am no longer interested in that position. But the Supreme Lord, when he gives to him his benediction, he also awards him that which he wants to give. At the same time, he also gives him what Dhruva wanted in the initial case. So in one sense, he forces Dhruva. Dhruva says, I don't want it. He says, no, you take. That was your initial desire. Is God always successful? Yes. Because he has one of his potencies called Satya Sankalpa Shakti. So this potency of the Supreme Lord, it executes everything even before he can complete his wish. So whatever he desires is already ready. That is Satya Sankalpa Shakti. Does God fail? Yes. In today's situation, God has failed. So what can Krishna not do? Krishna can do everything. He thought Rukmini will respond in a way that he anticipated. But God failed. Can God fail? Yes. Yes. But this failure is not a fault on him. When we fail out of some kind of incompleteness, or because of because we are not perfect. That's why we fail. But when God fails for a purpose. So God fails here because he does not want to win the war of ego. He could have justified and he could have taken it for the basis. Here I am not a god. Yes, here I am not the Supreme Lord. Here I am a husband and she is my wife. She has dedicated everything for me. So now I have to take care of her. So it is mentioned in the war of ego, the loser is always the winner. So when there is a war of ego in a relationship, then the person who takes a step back from ordinary considerations, he loses. But actually, in the ultimate understanding, the loser is always a winner.
So that's how Lord Krishna, although he loses, still he wins. So there's something very interesting here. In every relationship we have with different people, and especially because here it is mentioned about grihastha life, now there is always give and take. So you give something. Dadati prati grihanati. These are the principles of any relationship. It means there will be some winning and losing. Sometimes you give something and it does not work. Sometimes you receive something but you fail to appreciate. So this winning and losing. In Lord Krishna's case, especially in relationship with his closest devotees, we can say Lord Krishna today, or in this section, is experiencing the joy of losing. We usually are looking for the joy of winning. That's what we have been taught in our lives. Achieve more, get more, conquer more. The greatest people whom we worship are those who conquered always. The losers are not glorified in this world. But here we can see in a relationship, Lord Krishna is saying, I want to enjoy the joy of losing. So just like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he shows ideal sannyasi behavior. Similarly, Lord Krishna in Dwarka shows the ideal grihastha behavior. So there are a lot of important lessons for grihasthas. See, to accomplish any purpose in life, we have some techniques. We do certain things. And when the technique fails, then what is our usual response? We become more heavy. We try to justify, we try to prove how actually my intent was good. That takes humility, but most of the times we'll try to prove in different ways how I was never wrong. But even if somebody is humble, then he says, you know what, okay, I did a mistake, but actually my intent was very good. My heart was very good. So especially for devotees, our heart is always clean. Usually a devotee never has a mal intention. But in dealings in this world, there are two considerations, intent and content. So many times, our intent is good, but the content, the words that we speak or the way we deal, sometimes there is an error there. And if we are really genuine, then we should accept it. We should say, actually my intent was good, but my content was not good. I apologize for it. I take a step back. But sometimes, you know, we even try to prove the content also. No. Actually, when I said that, I meant this. You misunderstood me in that way. So there are words and there is an effect of that words. When insulted, Vidura was unagitated and he took it as an opportunity to tour all the holy places. Avanti Brahman, when insulted, he became super detached. Chitraketu, when he was insulted, he took that chastisement as something that he deserved, and he instead glorified the chastiser. He called Mother Parvati, who's insulting him, who's chastising him, saying, you are my mother, so mother can definitely chastise the son. King Indradyumna, when he was meditating and he failed to glorify Agastya Rishi, then he is also insulted. He said, you are a dull, animal-like person. So Indradyumna quietly accepts it. Then he becomes Gajendra. Parikshit, when insulted, he became introspective and he claimed that actually this is something that is a result of his over-attachment to his assets, to his family and his kingdom. Bali Maharaj, when insulted by Shukracharya, he says, now you are going to lose everything. You don't listen to me. You are not obeying me. Bali Maharaj took that insult and the situation to a greater height of complete self-surrender. So we see how different personalities respond in different ways. But all these personalities that I mentioned, they are mentioned in the Bhagavatam. So they are pure devotees. So even if they are being insulted and the situation is very tough to handle, they know how to respond. They respond with acceptance. They respond with gratitude. They respond with thankfulness. But in our lives, if we end up purposefully or inadvertently, whether it is out of intent or whether it is not out of intent, whatever it is, but if somebody gets hurt by us, what should be the response? Usually the response will be harsh. What to speak if somebody insults us? So we have to handle it very carefully. We can also understand that in any relationship, the head and the heart both are important. Usually we focus on the heart, but we forget the head part. So we should use our intelligence also to make sure that we do not commit mistakes in a relationship. And if at all there is a mistake, then from Lord Krishna's example, we can take a step back. We can also enjoy the joy of losing. Many times in the Bhagavatam, we come across criticism or condemnation of married life. In one of the shlokas of Prahlad Maharaj, he says, Adanta gobhir vishatam tamishram. He speaks about graha vratanam. People who have taken a vrat to be attached to their homes. But he is describing them as adanta. Adanta means they are uncontrolled. So, many times when there is a description of married life and when there is condemnation, if somebody is very immature, then he thinks, does it mean that grihastha life has no place in the Srimad Bhagavatam? Is it that spiritual life and Krishna consciousness is only for the renunciates? No, then we have to understand it properly that is, there are two concepts, griha medhi and grihastha. So griha medhi is that person who lives an uncontrolled life of sense gratification. He sees married life as some kind of a license for overindulgence in enjoyment. Whereas what is grihastha life? Grihastha life is a life of responsibility. So yes, the Bhagavatam condemns the unrestricted sensual enjoyment that is sometimes practiced by non-spiritually oriented people in their married life, but it very much glorifies and it eulogizes proper, responsible grihastha life. If 99% of the devotees in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness are grihasthas, there are hardly a few people in the renounced order. And if we go on condemning grihastha life, how will this movement go on? So, when we condemn the false ideas of grihastha life, of married life, I feel there is also a need for presenting similarly, in a balanced way, the desirable conceptions. What is desired? What is the ideal standards of married life? But usually what happens is we end up criticizing married life more. It's easier to dovetail our tendency of criticism whenever we get a chance. But, you know, in our presentations, if we just speak on the negative side of married life and we do not touch the positive side of married life, then I feel, you know, in the long run, we ourselves will lose. All of us have an understanding that the three orders out of the four orders, that is the brahmachari, the vanaprastha and the sannyas, they don't earn money. They just serve Krishna wholeheartedly, try to serve Krishna wholeheartedly. And the grihasthas are the ones who earn money. So there is a clear understanding that grihasthas provide money. But is that all? Do grihasthas only provide money? Grihasthas also provide the children. In a very technical way, they also provide the manpower. So for any industry to go on, yes, there is a, you know, vision required, there is excellent management required, there are ideas required, but there is money also required. Without money, all those ideas are of no use. And let's say you have the money also and you have the ideas also, but now you need the manpower also, is it not? So what are the true assets, especially of an institution or a society like ISKCON? So for a, you know, industry or for a corporate entity, what are the assets? The assets are definitely the fixed assets, the property. It is also definitely the money, the fluid cash that they have, and also the manpower. But what are the assets of a society like ISKCON? The actual assets of a society like ISKCON is not the property, is not the money. It is actually the devotees. It is actually the people who are the practitioners of that process. So who is going to produce, because we are speaking from this aspect of a, you know, organization, who will produce the manpower? The brahmacharis don't have children, the vanaprasthas have given it up, the sannyasis also don't do it. So the grihasthas have that wonderful responsibility of providing the most important assets for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness tomorrow. So if hearing very criticizing classes or classes in which there is extra overt condemnation of grihastha life, if some grihastha is not properly trained, he feels, oh, you know, I have entered into an ashram which is not exactly good for spiritual life. And if he becomes, you know, detached from his responsibilities, if he becomes detached from his relationships, what kind of a society will we see in the future? We'll see grihasthas who don't talk to each other within the family, or immaturely they see each other as objects of disgust. The husband sees the wife as somebody to stay away from, and the wife sees the husband as somebody to stay away from. But those descriptions are about Griha Medhi life. They are not about Grihastha life. It's very important for us to understand that the Grihastha ashram is a very important pillar, not only in terms of providing the resources in terms of money, but also the manpower, the actual assets of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. I remember, you know, how many years back, probably it was 2006 or probably it was 2007, but the day was the appearance day of His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj. And one of the senior devotees, I'm not mentioning his name because I don't want him to be embarrassed, but he was giving class that day. So he was especially given that seva on that particular day. So since he has served His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj quite a lot, so then he was speaking in his class on that day. He spoke the general Bhagavatam class, and in the last 10 minutes or so, I think at least for 5 minutes, he glorified His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj and how he has contributed to this community, Shri Radha Gopinath Mandir. And in the last 2 or 3 minutes, it was very interesting to note that he said, and also on today's tithi of appearance day of His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, my offering to Maharaj will be incomplete without glorifying those who supported His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. He used the words, those who bought the vision of His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. So it was the appearance day of His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, but he is expressing gratitude to those people also who accepted His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj's vision. So there are many people in this world who are very intelligent, who are very far-sighted, and who have that purity to see what it takes for devotees to become encouraged and enthusiastic in devotional service. But when they propose their ideas, there is nobody to purchase that vision. There is nobody to invest their money, their energy, their faith in that person's vision. So when the vision is vision, it has not taken shape. It means it's an idea, it's a concept. At that time, when certain ideas were proposed by His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, one particular idea that was proposed was the counseling system. And there was no precedent to the counseling system before Maharaj introduced it. So certain people, they agreed to it. Certain people put faith in Maharaj and they said, yes, we would like to execute what you are speaking. And now the results are appearing, but it takes faith at that moment of time. So this devotee was expressing how, unless these devotees would have cooperated and would have accepted the vision of Radhanath Maharaj, that vision would have just remained an idea. That vision would have just remained in his own conception. It would not have taken shape. So I really like this, that he was expressing gratitude not just to the leader sannyasi, but also to those who accepted that vision. Many times the leader has an idea, and you know, when he presents it, the acceptance is not there. Maybe because of a lack of maturity, maybe because they have not been able to actually understand the depth of that vision, the farsightedness of that vision. But I really like this, how this devotee in a very mature way also glorified the grihasthas who cooperated with Radhanath Maharaj's vision. And that is this cooperation between grihasthas and the renounced order is something that is the hallmark of this community, and I feel that has contributed largely to the success of this community. So we can't just go on condemning married life. We have to condemn the unrestricted sensual part of married life and give the positive part. We should also educate those who are married in what is actually the good part of married life. The fear of some of us is that if we enter into good relationships, a good relationship is, as I mentioned, you give, you take, you accept your mistakes, you take a step back, you enjoy the joy of losing. The fear is that if I invest too many emotions in some person, what if he cheats me? So, sometimes people speak how the person who can potentially give you the greatest pain is not some outsider. The person who has the capacity to give you the greatest pain in your life usually is the person who is the closest to you. Because you are too dependent on him or her. And then that's why you give him that right, in one sense, to control you. That is a relationship. So then some people, if they hear this line, then oh, it means, you know, any time I enter into a good relationship, into a very deep relationship with any person, is it that I'm giving him a right to exploit me? So then the logical conclusion of this is, my love, my affection is only for Krishna. To those who are little mature and to Guru, yes, but they would dare not take that step to have a very close relationship with any devotee. Why? Oh, there can be fear. He is not a pure devotee. What if he exploits me? So think about the consequences. We have formed a society. That's what Srila Prabhupada mentions in the Upadeshamrit, that International Society of Krishna Consciousness has been formed to facilitate the six loving exchanges. So Prabhupada formed a society so that we can do dadati pratigrihnati. But when we hear this one line and then we take it in a very immature way, we shun all relationships with devotees. Only with the pure personalities, only with Guru and Krishna. Can you imagine the disastrous consequences of this? Will this society grow? We'll have people running away from each other. So we should understand, yes, this logic applies in a mundane relationship. In a mundane relationship, this applies. How? In one class, some months back, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was mentioning how an ordinary mundane person is actually hollow. His heart is hollow. So he tries to fill up that hollowness with certain things that are available in the mundane world, in the material world. So many times he ends up filling that hollowness with things of this world. If he's a little lucky, if he has good relationships, then one hollow person will try to fill up the hollowness in his heart. Then there is some space for love in his heart. He tries to fill it up by having a relationship with another mundane person. So here the meaning of the word mundane is, he is not a devotee. He does not have any pure ambitions in his life. So it's like one bankrupt person who sees his bank account and he says, oh, it's all empty. Then he tries to fill up the bankruptcy in his bank account by making contact with another bankrupt person. That other person is also hollow. That person also does not have any substance. So when one hollow person tries to fill up his hollowness by having a relationship with another hollow person, he has some selfishness there, but the other person thinks, oh, he is also hollow, yes? So he wants to fill up his hollowness by your association. So then sometimes he might exploit you to fill up his hollowness, just like you are sometimes trying to exploit him to fill up your hollowness. So yes, when two bankrupt people are having expectations of gaining something from each other, then this can happen, that when you are trying to have a relationship with somebody, actually you are exposing yourself to be exploited by that person. But what about devotees? Are devotees hollow? No, devotees are not hollow. We are, to the extent to which we are sincere, to that extent our heart is full of the reciprocation of love that we have experienced from Krishna. To the extent to which we have made sacrifices in our lives for coming close to Krishna. Who can come close to Krishna without making sacrifices? To some bigger or smaller extent, all of us sitting here have made certain sacrifices in our life. So to the extent to which we have made sacrifices, to that extent we have come close to Krishna. To the extent to which we have come close to Krishna, we have experienced his reciprocation. So there is substance. We have experienced something that has kept us year after year, month after month in spiritual life. It's very easy to come to the temple. Many times during this Bhagavatam classes, we see many visitors who come to the temple, yes? So they come, they click pictures, they look around, they say it's a very nice temple, and they walk away. Now some of the devotees are trying to give them a permanent connection in the form of books, but essentially, nobody knows what happened, yes? So there is a good chance that they just looked at the physical part of the temple. But what makes you all come to the temple, not just once, not just twice, but there are so many devotees here connected to this community who have been coming again and again. It means they experience something that is nourishing them on a daily basis. That is nourishing them on a regular basis. So what is that? That is some reciprocation. So a devotee is not hollow. It means one devotee should not feel fear in coming close to another devotee, taking shelter of that statement that when you come close to a person, you expose yourself to the risk of getting exploited by that person. God forbid, even if some devotee exploits you, what does it mean? It means you gave a lot to him, but he did not reciprocate. In fact, he cheated you. But look at it from this perspective. Is he a devotee? Yes. So finally, he is somebody who is dear to Krishna. So if you keep the experience part aside, you ended up giving more and more to somebody who is dear to Krishna. Even if he is not happy about it, Krishna is happy about it. Krishna is saying, you did your part to somebody who is dear to him. And how he deals with that cheater, devotee, is up to Krishna. He will take proper care about it. Yes? So, you know, in a relationship with devotees, and specifically because we are discussing with this chapter, and specifically because these two shlokas are talking about a grihastha ashram, a husband and a wife, if they are devotees, should not see closeness to each other as something that is obstructing their advancement in Krishna consciousness. If they develop trust between each other, if they develop intimacy between each other, that will enhance their Krishna consciousness. Our destination is the spiritual world. It is definitely not the material world. And it's very beautiful. So can the journey to a beautiful destination be also beautiful? Or is it necessary that the journey to a beautiful destination has to be useless, has to be ugly, so that when you reach the beautiful destination, then you appreciate the beautiful destination even more? Is it a necessity? No. So yes, we want to go to the spiritual world, but the journey to the spiritual world is our ashram. So Vedic culture teaches us that the journey to a beautiful destination can also be beautiful. So yes, in the spiritual world, when we reach all the environment there, all the relationships there, whatever happens there is very sweet. But does it mean that we have to hurt ourselves, we have to prevent ourselves from experiencing happiness in this material world so that when we reach the spiritual world, then we'll be thankful for it? No, it's not necessary. Even when we are in the material world, but if we have very good, satisfying relationships with devotees, when we reach there, it's not that it will serve to lessen the joy when we reach there. In fact, if we have very satisfying relationships with the devotees in the material world, it will enhance our faith that if this is what I am getting in the material world, where the environment is contrary to purity, contrary to trust, can you imagine what will happen to me when I reach the spiritual world, where even the environment will be favorable for having good relationships? It will push me forward to the spiritual world, not act as an obstruction to the spiritual world. There are many examples in the Srimad Bhagavatam itself. There is an example of King Priyavrat. So when he was renounced, although he was the elder brother of King Uttanapada, he did not take the responsibility of being a king. He thought, I am too renounced. So it took two Mahajans, Swayambhuva Manu and Brahma, had to intervene and convince him, there is no fit king, you have to rule. So then he accepted it, and then he became a ruler. So it is mentioned, as a grihastha, the same super detached brahmachari acted as a perfect householder. He was completely controlled by the shy glances of his wife. He was completely controlled by the affectionate smiles of his wife. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also mentions, he was even controlled sometimes by the movements of the raised nose of his wife. That's what he mentions. So it appears as if in Grihastha Ashram he was completely controlled by his wife. But it is mentioned, no, he was just playing that role. It is necessary in Grihastha Ashram for the wife to experience affection from the husband, for the wife to experience that kind of superiority to the husband. In today's world, because the men are the one who, at least to some extent, they go out and earn money and like that. So let's consider a typical family where the husband earns. So then he's very academically, he's advanced academically in his working environment. he is handling different complex projects and he is getting a lot of money and he is one of the most respected people in his organization. So in fact, you know, he is becoming like a kind of a controller or somebody who is very superior. So the problem is, when you are an achiever in the outside world, then when you come to home, some of that inertia comes home. And then a typical achiever husband tends to become also an achiever in terms of that relationship with his wife. So in simple terms, he becomes a boss. His boss at his office, so he also tries to boss over his wife. Now every one of us has a need to win. Somewhere we also feel that we also need appreciation, we also need some encouragement. So now in this family, if the husband is the one who earns money, who is the breadwinner, and the wife is not the breadwinner, he takes care of the assets like money, property and all, and she takes care of the most prized, valuable assets, the children. Where will she win? She wins in her area, that is her home. But now if the husband is over possessive, he wins at his office, so he wants to win at his home. He is not giving a chance to the wife to win in any place. What happens to that wife? That wife will get suffocated. So at home, it's best if the husband loses. So his joy of winning, his need of winning, he should satisfy not at home, he should satisfy at his office. There you do all that competitive things that you want to do, you win, you argue, you show how superior you are. At home, you give the control to your wife. In many families, I have seen personally how the husband earns money, and then at the end of the month when he brings the money, he just hands it over to his wife. So you know, the whole fruit of his month's worth of labor is just handed over to his wife. I've seen my father, at the end of the month, he hands over the money to my mother, and when he wants some money for certain daily expenses, I have seen him for years asking my mother for money. So when I was a small child, I said, what is he doing? No, he earns all the money, my mother is a housewife. But my mother then says, okay, how much do you want? Then whatever is required, then you know, she gives it to him. Any important decision in my home, my father would say, okay, you know, we'll think about this. And then he would consult my mother. So my mother is given that role that in this home, you are the winner. So that's what is really important. That's what is necessary. Krishna is teaching us, we can do a lot of project management. We can do a lot of disaster management. But the most important management is relationship management. So Krishna is teaching us, you know, in trying to kill the Kauravas, in trying to kill all the Asuras, I did a lot of disaster management. But now after handling all the disaster management outside my home, now is the time to do some relationship management inside my home. I have doused many fires outside my home. Now it's a need to douse the fire inside my home. This is the most important part. I have one small story which I would like to share with you. One time one couple, they got newly married and they approached one Sri Vaishnav Guru. And they said, now that we have married, we would like to ask you for some instructions for happy married life. And this Vaishnav Guru is a guru. He's mature. So he says, okay, before I give you instructions, I want to ask you some questions. So he says, if there is some fight, if there is some tussle in your married life, who wins? So the husband, you know, without looking at the wife, he says, I. And the wife, because she is submissive, she is cultured, so she keeps quiet. So then the Sri Vaishnav Guru told them, okay, I'll tell you one incident from Ramayana. So this, okay, I will hear. So he mentioned how at one point of time in Nasik, after Sita, Ram and Lakshman had spent quite some time in Nasik, actually that forest life was very heavy. Chitrakoot at least was very beautiful. So Nasik is also beautiful. But in Chitrakoot, no Rakshasas attacked. So here, you know, a lot of Rakshasas, and it was a very dangerous place, Janasthan. They had got warnings from Agastya Rishi also, that it's a place infested with Rakshasas. So the atmosphere there was more tense than Chitrakoot. Chitrakoot was a very conjugal atmosphere, but in Nasik it was a little tense. So at one point of time, Sita Devi, she thought that, you know, the atmosphere should become a little light. So she suggests to Lakshman and Ram that maybe we should have some kind of a sports or something to lighten the mood. So she suggests that I'll be the judge and you too, maybe we can have some competition. So Lakshman says, you are a chaste wife. You love Lord Ram so much. So he says, in any competition, even if I win, you will declare Ram as the winner. Or most probably, you will always choose a sport in which Ram will win. So he says, I am not going to do anything like that. So Sita Devi says, nothing like that. I am honest. But Lakshman does not agree. So then Lakshman suggests, or Sita Devi suggests, okay, if you don't believe me, you become the judge and myself and Ram will play some sport. So Lakshman says, okay. So then what is the sport? Obviously it can't be archery or anything. So then the sport that is decided is swimming. So the river Godavari is there and Sita Devi suggests, alright. So the competition is both me and Lord Ramchandra will swim across the river and touching the other part will come back. Let's see. So now, you know, Lord Ramchandra is Ajanulambita Bhujau. He has his long arms. And he has a strong arms, he's a kshatriya. So, you know, it's not to win or to lose. It is just to lighten up the mood. So the competition starts, both start. And Lord Ramchandra with his long, slender arms, so he's pushing the water with every stroke. So he goes there and he comes back halfway. And when he's on his return path halfway, he comes across Sita Devi on her way halfway. Yes, Sita Devi is a slow swimmer. She's gentle. So, he looks at Sita Devi going and he thinks, if I continue in this way, I'm going to win. So, if I'm going to win, she's going to lose. But she is my Antaranga Shakti. So, if Antaranga Shakti loses, it means eventually I will lose. Yes, but one of the characteristics of devotional service is Shri Krishna Akarshini. Is it not the sixth characteristic? It means bhakti is so powerful that it can attract or control Krishna, who is the all-powerful. So he thinks, if Sita Devi wins, I will lose. Sita Devi loses, I will lose. So he is thinking like this and he goes into a trance. And when he goes into a trance, Sita Devi goes, touches, comes back and she wins. So Ramchandra is in a trance and he is brought to external consciousness by the laughter of Sita and Lakshman. So Sita and Lakshman are laughing and having a nice time. How Sita Devi defeated Lord Ramchandra. And Lord Ramchandra is thinking, I lost, but both of them are happy. So if by my losing, both of them are happy, he says, let me lose 1,000 times again and again. If by my losing, they are happy. So then the Sri Vaishnava Guru asked them, or told them, in a fight between a husband and wife, if the husband wins, he said, it is a third class marriage. In a fight between husband and wife, if the wife always wins, he said, it is a second class marriage. So this is something interesting. Then he says, in a marriage and in a fight between husband and wife, if the principle of love wins, then it is a first class marriage. So what does it mean for the principle of love to win? It's not important whether I win or you win. What matters is, whoever wins, is our relationship getting enhanced? Are we coming close to each other? And for devotees, when they come close to each other, it means they're coming close to a devotee of Krishna. It does not mean a man is coming close to a woman or a woman is coming close to a man. One devotee of Krishna is coming close to another devotee of Krishna. Mahabharata mentions how, you know, Shishupal is accusing Bhishma in the Rajasuya Yagya. He calls him a bhulinga bird. He says, you are like a bhulinga bird. So what is this bhulinga bird? This bhulinga bird is a bird, it is mentioned there, that a lion, when he eats meat, some of the small particles of meat get stuck in between his teeth. So it can lead to rotting of the teeth. So this bhulinga bird, the mouth, the lion keeps his mouth open and the bhulinga bird will come, perch on his teeth and eat all those small pieces of flesh. So now think about it, the lion is the king of the jungle. The biggest animals and the smallest animals all run away from fear. But he understands, as far as this is concerned, I am helpless. So he keeps his mouth open and does not close it to swallow the Bhulinga bird. Why? He understands sometimes there is a joy in losing. I'll end with a small incident that happened in my sister's family. My parents were visiting my sister and it was a weekend. So my sister wanted to cook some favorite dishes of my father and mother. And she cooked something. So as she is cooking, my Jijaji, my brother-in-law, he's leaving for office. And usually, typically in any office, Saturday is a little bit light on work side. So my sister told him, you know, I'm cooking some special dishes for all of you. She did not say for my parents. So I would be very happy if you come in the afternoon to have lunch so that we can have lunch together. So now his response was that it's not possible. I have a lot of meetings today. Now we don't know what is the truth, but that's what he said. So then my sister said, you know, my parents were telling me. So my sister said, okay, if you can't come, I'll do one thing. After cooking, I'll drive. His office is close by. He said, I'll drive and I'll bring those dishes in a tiffin box. And at least can you do this thing that you come down from your office and take that tiffin and then you eat it alone. So when my sister, she said that, then my brother-in-law, now he also took a step back. He said, okay, no, I'll come. So you know, sometimes what happens is, when he says, you know, it's difficult for me to come, then there could have been a chance where my sister would have, I know what happens on Saturday. So many Saturdays I have seen you, you know, you came back early. Why today? I know why. You know, I'm making those dishes for my parents. You know, that kind of a traditional, typical give and take between a husband and wife. But my sister, she took a step back. She said, okay, you can't come, no problem. But I want you to have those dishes hot in the afternoon. I'll drive and I'll give you that tiffin. And what was the response? Because my sister took a step back and she did not try to justify or fight with him or argue with him. He also took a step back and he actually ended up coming in the afternoon for that lunch. And when he came to have that lunch with the family, he discovered that my parents and my sister had not taken lunch. So he was very happy, you know, I mean, he did not express it, but he was quite surprised because it was late. So he thought that maybe they have already taken, but they said, no, we knew that you will come, so then we waited for you. So this is called, you know, a situation whereby losing, you win. And I feel that in Grihastha life and to some extent in all our relationships, we have to experience this joy of losing. So it's not about who wins, it's about the principle of love winning. So with these few points, we'll end this class. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai.